Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're with us today. Our goal with this program is to bring you credible and valid information, and I want to emphasize credible and valid information and insights about diverse things going on in our community from members of the community and people involved in serious topics. Sometimes it's lighthearted, sometimes it's very serious, but I want to remind you that we do our best to make sure that the information you hear and the people we share with you understand what they're talking about and understand why they're doing it. And that's why we're really here, because a lot of what we need to do on Central Coast Voices is address how today's choices are affecting both today's community and tomorrow's community, and the ramifications of change or lack of change and how that affects things. If you're a regular listener, you know that this is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, which is part of the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation. And we put out a report at Action for Healthy Communities about every 3 years called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. And it was last published in December of 2013. If you'd like a copy of the entire report, it is available for a PDF download for free, no charge, at www.actionslo.org. And one of the topics that is in that report and one of the things that has come up for discussion is the state of the homeless community in San Luis Obispo County and how they're being addressed. And our topic today is basically about the effort by San Luis Obispo to build a homeless services center. We hope that's something that you're familiar with. We hope to make it more familiar for you after we're done today. And we'll talk about the fact that there'll be a public program tomorrow, and we'll get into that in detail, that you can also join my guests and others as we talk about this. My guests today are Grace McIntosh, who is the Deputy Director of CAPSLO in San Luis Obispo. And for those who might not know what CAPSLO is, it is Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo. For some of us, it's still EOC. But I say that even though the CAPSLO folks don't like it referred to as EOC anymore, for some of us, it was EOC for so long, we're not quite sure what CAPSLO is. Anyway, and Grace is with us today. John Spadafore, who is president of the Homeless Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. That is not his day job, but he's lived in San Luis Obispo County. He took on that project because he really cares about the community and wanted to be involved in that. And we'll get into why John is doing that in a little bit. And Jerry Ryu, who is the executive director of the San Luis Obispo County Housing Trust Fund. And at some point, we'll probably try to decide how we can best explain what that does, because I've heard it explained, Jerry, about four or five different ways, and all of them are valid, but some of them make it somewhat confusing. I want to remind you folks that this is a community program, and KCBX is public community radio, and that's why we're here, and that's why we make this available to you. And it is a discussion. It's not a monologue. We would love to have your calls and have you share in this discussion. You can call in at 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. I would encourage you to call early in the program. We oftentimes have people who call in the last 5 or 6 minutes, and it's difficult to squeeze that in. And so please, if you have questions or concerns or observations you want to make on this topic, please join us early. I want to welcome my guests. This is a topic that it's been around for a while. It's been around since there's been humanity on Earth. And how we address it and how we focus on it is something that's open for discussion all the time. There's a discussion, and what brought us here today, among other things, is there'll be a public forum tomorrow evening at the city county. Tomorrow morning. I'm sorry about 9:30 tomorrow morning, not 9:30 tomorrow. Sorry, 9:30 tomorrow morning at the county library, and we'll remind people about that and how they can get more information about that. But this is a discussion about the prospects for building a new facility that will make sure things are not as separate and as unconnected as they have been to some extent. John, I'd like to start with you since you took on the project of being the president of the Homeless Foundation to look at this project. Where are we and where are we going?
Actually, we're in a great place now, and we're going to a place where we will have raised enough funds to build a site, a building on a three-acre site that will be completely owned by Community Action Partnership with no debt. That has already gone into escrow, so we do have the 40 Prado site, which is exciting. The other part is the community support throughout the county, all communities, to create a center where services can be provided, programs for various needs within the homeless community, which is varied in and of itself. And we've already started a quiet campaign, and we are quite a ways into that fundraising, and we will be presenting that in more detail to the community as we go forward.
What services are going to be combined there, and what new services, I guess, will come about?
Well, right now we have day services provided at the Prado Day Center, located at one end of town. And then the evening overnight services are provided at the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter on the other side of town. Case management is provided actually countywide, but the case managers go between the two locations sort of to hang their hat and visit with clients. And so what will happen is these two facilities will essentially be consolidated into the one center. So it's going to be a tremendous support to the clients primarily, who won't have to be trekking across town back and forth every day. We'll be able to have all of the services located in one location 24/7. So it's really a tremendous improvement that we see happening.
The reference to this as 40 Prado, the site, that may be the address, but when we look at it on a map, it's actually, it wraps around over on Elk Lane, doesn't it? So it's it's a large site, and it won't be only the homeless services center?
No, it's almost a 10-acre site that now, as I mentioned, is in escrow. Approximately 6.8 acres will be utilized by the Regional Transportation Association, which is a multi-governmental entity, and they're going to be building their new hub on that site. And then the approximate 3.2 acres will be available for the new homeless center for the combination of services that Grace mentioned.
Okay. So for a little shorthand, if you see an RTA bus running around town that says RTA on the side, that's going to be basically their maintenance and operations center. It's not necessarily going to be a transit center. It's their industrial and commercial center, if you will.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And as we will discuss later, this has been a remarkable project cooperative effort by a number of governmental, nonprofit, and community groups to see this happen.
Yeah. I want to remind you that we will accept calls, and we would like you to give us a call and talk with us with your questions or concerns about where this project is going and what you may want to know that we're covering here in a little more detail. The phone number is 781-3875. This is Central Coast Voices, and we're talking today about the new homeless center that is planned for San Luis Obispo. Jerry, how is the Housing Trust involved in this project?
Primarily, we support permanent housing, or at least transitional housing. But about a year ago, I realized how tremendous the homeless problem is in our county. And so we're a co-sponsor for the forum tomorrow, and we'll look at ways that we can support the development of the new center if that's possible.
Yeah. Jerry, you and I have been involved in this first because I'm involved in the Action for Healthy Communities Committee, and there's some homeless information being sorted out right now. And you shared some things in a meeting recently that I found both interesting and somewhat flabbergasting, and that was the ratio of available rentals and the number of homeless people in the county. Can you share that with us?
Basically, there are more than two times as many homeless people on any given night as there are vacant rental units in the county. So if we were to house every homeless person, we'd run out of housing before we got halfway through.
And that doesn't take into account that there's people who are constantly looking for housing or moving in and out of the area, so that's going on all the time.
We have a tremendous housing problem.
So it's not just a financial problem for housing, it's a logistical problem for housing. It's tough. The center that you're looking at building, well, that you're planning to build and is in the stages of being designed, I guess, at this point, what kind of timeline are we looking at for there to actually be a facility that's occupiable and usable?
You know, right now we're anticipating, after meeting with the architect, George Garcia, that we will begin construction sometime next year, towards the middle or fourth quarter of next year. And I just wanted to add to something that Jerry mentioned. Program services, whether they be job-related, housing-related, employment, medical care-related at the center, will only be successful if there is transitional and then permanent housing for individuals, because there's little hope for someone who, through whatever, either financial or medical issues, no longer has a residence, a home, a roof above their head, to go through a program with no location for them to be and to live. And when I was on the school board, we had 10% of our student body was homeless.
Yeah, actually, that showed up in some of the information you sent me beforehand, and I was flabbergasted to see that. So we're talking about students that, you know, we're not talking about individuals. There's this perception that the average homeless person is a middle-aged male with no direct family connections, and that's everybody we're dealing with. That may be a part of the population that we see that's more visible in some cases, but it's not the population we're really talking about. We're talking about families. So how do we address the needs of families? Because, Grace, I don't think the current homeless shelter has much of a way to handle families, does it?
No. Right now, our families go to a church or synagogue in order to be sheltered for the evening. That is because, in part, large part, due to the 50-bed max capability at Maxine Lewis Memorial. And so our overflow, as we call it, churches and the synagogues, can support up to 35 individuals, and those are always usually family and small children. Last night, I looked at our statistics. Last night, we had 8 small children there, and we were at a full 35 capacity. So there's lots of families out there.
The perception, I think, for a lot of people, and it's a, I believe, a misconception, but it comes up, and that is that the homeless that end up in San Luis County come here. It's not their locals that had a life here before they were homeless. They come here because it's a beautiful place, and gee whiz, you're going to build a nice new center. Won't this be the resort for homeless people?
Well, you know, the data depends on where you've gotten it from, of course. For our purposes, we look at data at Prado and at Maxine Lewis. And in the last 12 months, about 48% of our population were folks who stated that they were from here, from the area. There was another percentage that said they were not really from the area, but they came to the area because they did have family and friends here. So there is a connection here to San Luis Obispo County. And then another percentage said they came here for employment, not necessarily because they had employment waiting, but because they wanted to be here and they were going to get a job. So so the majority of our people, yes, are from the area. Or are connected in some way to the area. But what we are seeing is a fairly stable percentage that are somewhat transient, so that are coming through and moving on. And that's never really changed.
The perception seems to be, though, if you have a place where there's good services for homeless people, you know, communications works real well. To say, gee, they've got a great place where you can get a really great meal in San Luis Obispo, and they may not yell at you and kick you around as much as they do in some other town that gives you a bus ticket out of town. So how do you address that concern in the community?
Well, and that's a legitimate concern that we've heard about. And what I can tell you is we do have a sense of compassion for the client population that we serve. But it's interesting you ask this because we are in the process now of making some fairly fundamental program changes to our services. And I wanted to take a few minutes to talk about that because some people may feel as though we're going in the opposite direction.
Okay, let's get back to that in just 1 second. I want to remind folks that they're welcome to call in. This is Central Coast Voices, and we're talking about the plans for the new homeless center in San Luis Obispo and issues of housing and homeless problems and concerns anyway, and you're welcome to give us a call. We would like you to be part of this discussion. The phone number is 781-3875. We encourage you to call in. And Grace, I'm sorry to interrupt you, so get back to where
okay.
you were, okay?
In the past, our facilities have been what was called behavioral-based. So essentially, an individual could come into one of our two locations, and if they were under the influence of drugs or alcohol and able to maintain, they would be allowed to come into the facility. As of June 1st, however, and for a variety of reasons, which if we have time we can certainly talk about, we will be going to a sobriety-based model. And what that means is that if you are under the influence of drugs or alcohol, you will be asked to leave and only come back under certain circumstances. Basically, those circumstances are if you are willing to demonstrate through your actions that you want to do something about a drug and alcohol issue that you have and willing to move towards, which is really what our mission is, self-sufficiency or economic stability, as I prefer to call it. And if you're not willing to do that, then you will not access our services any longer.
Let's stick with that for a minute because questions that come to mind for a lot of folks, I'm sure, is that the community sees homeless services as a two-edged process.
Right.
So not only are you providing services for homeless people because they need assistance, but you're providing services to the community. And the perception is to keep the homeless people from pestering them other places in the community. That doesn't sound good, but I realize that's a perception that's out there. It's all gee whiz. As long as you can put the people in the homeless shelter, they're not going to be in Mission Plaza bugging people or out there stoned or drunk and in the way. So if you decide to create an environment, or you have decided to create an environment, but that environment basically says, if you're a drug abuser or an alcoholic or a user of alcohol in an excessive amount, you can't be in our homeless shelter. Where does that put that homeless person? And where does it put them in relation to the community?
Well, that's a good question. The reality is we have between the Maxine Lewis shelter and the overflow, we only have the capacity for 85 beds. So the presumption that all of the individuals that could be causing problems in the creeks or in the community are being safely housed at Maxine and out of everyone's hair is not correct because we simply don't have enough beds to do that in the first place. We've been doing some data collection internally. And we've been looking at a sampling of days over the last couple of months of the numbers of individuals who would really be presenting the most need to leave the program. Mm-hmm. And it's roughly about 10 to 15%. And we average about 120 people or so a day at Prado and between what we call the Dine and Dash program and the overnight program at Maxine, we average around 80 to 100 people. So that might be anywhere from 10 to 15 people during the day, 10 to 15 people at night. It is not a huge number of folks. So I think that's one thing I want folks to know is that it's not giant hordes of people now spilling out into the streets.
Yeah, thank you. We've got a call from Pat in San Luis Obispo. Pat, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. What are your thoughts or questions?
I had several points that I wanted to make. One of them was that the news, first of all, to say you're doing a good thing by planning a new homeless center, but you know the old homeless center that was planned next door to the social services was canned because some people complained about it. Well, nobody's complained about this one yet, and you're saying construction is in late 2015. I think you're fooling yourself. and I think you should say 2020. That does nothing for the homeless issue now. Anyway, the point I wanted to make was drug and alcohol treatment must be a part of this new center.
Okay, yeah, well,
you're fooling yourself if you think you're going to run this center and say, oh, if you're on drugs or alcohol, then you're banned from here. That needs to be part of this center.
Okay. Well, let's have – can you hold on while we address that? Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, yes, absolutely. We are actually today one of our certified drug and alcohol counselors who's been a Prado staff member is meeting with drug and alcohol, and we're going to be developing an MOU with them to begin to provide drug and alcohol groups as soon as possible at Prado. There are currently already AA and A groups going on there, but absolutely, you know, I think people need to know that even though we will be letting our clients know that they can't necessarily access services here, we do have a number of options or referrals for them to access. But for those who do want to try and make the necessary changes and take the necessary steps, we want to be able to support them. So having that drug and alcohol group going on, participating actively in case management, if they want to make a sincere and serious effort to stabilizing their lives, we will help them as best we can. We are reaching out, and we actually have some meetings that we're going to be starting later on this month with key folks, community action team from the police department, mental health, drug and alcohol, the faith-based community, and many others, to really look at the very concrete steps that we need to take now, not just when the center's built, but now, so that we can get these folks the services that they need. One of the things that we're recognizing is that you've got a lot of services out there, and everyone is trying to do the best they can. I do believe that. But until we have a little bit better coordination and communication, we're still going to be fragmented. And I think that's how we appear a lot of the times, is fragmented. And so one of the things we want to do is begin to start these very sincere dialogues around very concrete ways to help these folks and to have people at the table that know enough about the ins and outs that they can help to make decisions, to take it up to the folks who need to make those decisions so that we can help these folks.
Yeah, I think the people who come to the shelter now who are drunk or stoned are not surprised that we live in a society where that conduct is brought to their attention and challenged. So I think to challenge it is not new.
No, okay. Not at all. And we've gotten a tremendous amount of support from the community. We've been talking with folks about making this change and gotten a lot of support. Again, it's about being compassionate, but also holding people accountable and also supporting their decisions, whatever it may be. But as I said, we made this decision in a very thoughtful process and for several reasons. Obviously, the number one is that our mission, again, the mission of CAPSLO is to promote economic self-sufficiency for individuals. And for some of individuals, they've been in our services for years. And one has to question how mission compatible is that? And have we really challenged these individuals? Have we really offered to help them achieve self-sufficiency? And so by doing this, that is one step. Another step is obviously we want to create a safe and secure and stable environment for the folks that are there.
Yeah. We remind you folks, we're talking, of course, about the new homeless center that's being planned on Prado Road in San Luis Obispo. And we would like you to be part of the discussion. The phone number is 781-3875. It's 805-781-3875. If you haven't noticed, this is KCBX Public Radio at 90.1 for most of our listeners. And we're glad you're part of the discussion. We have a discussion like this, either Chris Kington Barker or myself, every Thursday afternoon. We host a topic that we believe is important to you, and we want you to be part of the discussion. So 781-3875. John, the caller that we had a moment ago, Pat, implied, and I think it's in a lot of people's minds, that as things go on and the design for the building, how much traffic it will or won't have, and all these other things, that some of the same people who were unhappy about the previously suggested location are going to start to become more vocal for this location.
And I think that's an important question. I want to point out that I've been involved for 2.5 years regarding the first campaign for the center that was proposed initially at South Higuera Street, and now the new one, which will be built at 40 Prado. And during that time, I've probably spent 20 to 30 hours a week, and I've met and been involved in many, many meetings through the community. The foundation was created to be a community group to address those issues and to cooperate with businesses, neighborhoods, landowners, property owners to address those issues. And one of the things that is very critical was months ago, I personally went to every business in the area, met the owners, met the landowners, gave them my name, my phone number, sent letters to everybody, including the Elks Club and the drive-in theater, and said, call me because this is a location where we're considering to have the homeless center, and it would be good to talk and discuss any issue that you have. There hasn't been any contact to me, and we're continuing to do that kind of outreach. And just briefly, I want to follow up on something that Gray said, and Jerry knows this also. Homeless is a group that isn't homogeneous. It's not one type. It's not one reason why someone becomes homeless. It's just not like you can say everybody's a Republican or a Democrat or a minority in a racial way and they all fit one description or one definition. There's different people within the homeless group. We're addressing a group that wants to return to sustainability, to return to economic stability. They have a commitment to that. There are other groups that the law enforcement agencies will deal with, unfortunately. There's other groups that mental health will have to deal with. There's other groups that will be dealt with in ways. And one of the goals is to have programs more available and coordinated. And we're really working on coordinating services to address all those issues. But it's not one homogeneous group.
There were a couple of people who I will say are fine members of our community, and I don't want to cast any aspersions on them, who were most vocal in the objection to the previous planned site. What kind of concerns did they have that are being addressed specifically at the new location?
Well, I can discuss that specifically.
Okay.
Excuse me. One of my good friends, Bill Toma, is working with me very closely on this new center at 40 Prado. For instance, he and I signed a joint letter to Senator Monning, who's our senator up in Sacramento, and Assemblyman Achagian, who went to bat to get the grant that we had with the former property through Capsule that they obtained. They had the grant transferred just recently to the 40 Prado site, and $1 million became available for the purchase and then toward the building. That was not going to happen unless we could prove that the entire community was supporting this concept at that location. Many people never thought that grant would ever be transferred and it would be lost, but it wasn't through the work of Community Action Partnership and the fact that the community has coalesced around it. We've also had contact with many other groups, banks, business area owners, and the meeting that we now are scheduling on the 22nd of May is actually to address concerns of that area and also to talk to the businesses in the South Higuera area to become one of the first financial and emotional supporters for this new center because they're the ones who brought the issues to bear initially, and now they're supporting. We had a meeting a year ago where there were 60 people from the South Higuera Street area, and at the end of the meeting I asked everyone, who in here would support building a homeless center at 40 Prado because we'd have 3 acres, it would be a better site. Everybody in that room raised their hand from the South Higuera site. So that's part of the community development of this need, and it is a need.
And you have the city owns a lot of land because they're the corporate yard for San Luis Obispo is right nearby. The movie theater, the drive-in movie is there. There's a bank that has a corporate or a regional office down the block. Those folks are all seeing this as a reasonable site to work with?
I haven't talked to all of them individually. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard from them either, even though there have been letters sent to the drive-in theater and the Elks Club, as I mentioned, and the others. But there will be more opportunities to discuss this as it moves forward because it truly will be a community project, and everybody has to have a commitment and input to make sure it's successful. And as Grace is discussing and Jerry has mentioned, it's much more than just a center. It actually is the ability to begin something that will be meaningful in the long run.
Jerry, you spoke earlier about the housing issue. Mm. If the the center as an effective tool is going to help people get out of being homeless. Probably syntax of that sentence wasn't really good, but I apologize. Anyway, it's going to address ways for people to basically end their homeless status and make them more connected permanently to the community and have a place to live. But there's a lack of Section 8 housing and things like that. How can we address that as a community?
The only way that we can address that is to approve the development of more apartments, modest apartments, both in San Luis Obispo and surrounding communities. That's really the issue. I supported a resolution from the Homeless Services Oversight Committee to encourage every city and the county to approve more secondary units, that these would be apartments, rental units behind existing homes, single-room occupancy, which is a small studio apartments. We need to produce more affordable housing countywide in order to solve the problem.
There's a program in Santa Margarita for some people who I can't remember the name of the program. They've actually, I think Chris had an interview with them on the show not too long ago, though, talking about some I want to say cabins, but that really is probably not a good description of it. Of a way of basically coming up with some a series of studio apartment type individual housing units. Yeah. Is that feasible, and how's that going?
It is feasible. That you're talking about Hope's Village, and their plans are moving ahead. I don't know where they stand right now, but there are villages like that that have been established in Olympia, Washington, and I think parts of Texas. It kind of goes along with the small house movement. So small cabins, basically, I would call them too, are built that people can live in and sleep in, and then they would have a common area that has recreational facilities and services. It's another way to do it. I think that we need more mobile home parks and trailer parks that people can live in that are more affordable than our current apartments.
Maybe 75 or 100 years ago, a rather common way for people to live was in, like, rooming houses.
Exactly.
They don't exist anymore. Is that a feasible way to look at housing?
It definitely is. It's feasible, but most communities don't allow them. Residential hotels were also very common, and they almost don't exist anywhere in the state. We've gone through a process throughout the state of improving housing and eliminating the less expensive housing. So people have fewer choices for living. And as a society, we've improved our housing stock tremendously, but in the process, we've left people out to live on the streets. So some successes and some losses.
There's places like the Anderson Hotel. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's other facilities like the Anderson Hotel in San Luis County, but I'm familiar with the Anderson Hotel. I think there's 55 or 60 basically studio apartments, so it's
exactly
like a rooming house.
Well, they're independent units, okay. So those are one step above a rooming house. Yeah.
Okay. Is there a way to – well, let's back up. The Anderson Hotel is an older building that was available because that type of small downtown hotel is not that commonly used by people traveling for hotels. Are there other ways to expand upon that model?
Yes, definitely. And recently the Weinman Hotel was remodeled, and it offers similar units. Some of the units at the Weinman, the lower cost ones, are $600 a month, but they go up to $900 a month for basically a large hotel room with a kitchenette. They're actually profitable for investors because the rent that they get per square foot is much higher than the rent on other apartments. And I'm surprised that more investors don't develop SRO, what they're called SROs, single room occupancy. I'm surprised that more people don't build them.
On the ratio that – well, it's considered a reasonable ratio that 30% – I believe 30% of your income can go for basic housing.
Right.
So if it's $800 a month, you're talking about someone basically needing to make about $2,400 to $2,800 a month in order to occupy that.
Right.
That's not the kind of money that someone who is moving from homeless and no job is going to find available to them.
But many of the homeless, surprisingly, do work. And a full-time minimum wage level job or close to minimum wage job, a person could afford between $500 and $600 a month for rent. That would be one step above the most of the homeless. But even that kind of housing isn't available. So if we can produce more housing that would be at that level, then with some assistance in Section 8 or other programs, we could provide some more housing for the homeless as well as our low-wage workers.
Well, Grace, I want to put you on the spot again then. We were talking about a balancing act that may be tough to deal with. If the facilities of the new center and the way that we address the needs of homeless to become not homeless anymore are addressed, there it doesn't seem like there's any place for them to live that they can afford to live in.
That's right. Right at this point. In fact, now we have folks that are staying in our shelter that are on waiting lists. They've gotten housing, but they're on a waiting list to get in. And depending upon where it is, it can be quite lengthy. And so I think one of the things that we need to address in the new facility is a section of the facility that maybe isn't for those people who don't have anywhere to go, and so they're staying there truly for sheltering, from those folks who are kind of in this holding pattern and don't necessarily need to have the more emergency kinds of services. But for our place, we'll have nowhere to go. And we often lose people because they're in the shelters and they're waiting, and they kind of get sucked back in to a lifestyle that puts them right back to where they started. And so knowing that for some of our folks, it's going to be a while before they can get into their home, we want to be able to address that so that we can support them during that process and not really almost set them up to fail because there isn't sort of that place for them to be.
Mm. I remind you, this is of course you know the topic we're talking about today. It's the homeless issue generally, and specifically a way of addressing it with a new homeless facility on Prado Road. And we would like you to be part of the discussion if you'd like to join us, and we'd appreciate that. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. This is Central Coast Voices, and we would like your voice to join the discussion too. We had a couple of people who had some questions that may be answerable for us that didn't want to talk on the phone. One of them specifically was, what are we doing to deal with what has become a very evident problem, and that is returning veterans and veteran homeless? It's a very, very pervasive problem after the fact that we've been through more war than we care to think about in the last few years.
Well, I'd like to answer that quickly by saying, please vote for Prop 41 on June 3rd. It's a proposition to sell $600 million in bonds to provide housing for homeless veterans. It's a real problem, and that producing subsidized affordable housing is the way to address it.
You know, and I also just may add, and Jerry and Grace may know this, but I've heard, and I don't know exactly, that there is a grant coming from the federal government that CAPSLO has been involved with is specifically for housing assistance to veterans. And part of the byproduct of what's happening in terms of the discussion regarding homelessness, housing, the new center, is we're raising the involvement, the cooperative efforts of a lot of agencies, of a lot of governmental groups, of bodies, of different trusts like Jerry's, because it's a problem that will be solved more quickly by cooperation and by actually contributing to each other's cause. And that's what we're seeing, and we hope to continue to elevate that so they may.
In addition, the Housing Authority has gotten grants to provide rental assistance specifically for veterans. So that's another resource.
That's good to hear, and let's remember that. So Prop 41, it's on the June ballot?
Yep.
Okay, all right. So that's – and there's only, I think, two or three propositions on the ballot, so it shouldn't have to read down very far to find that, and that's good to know about. Another person was asking about the issue specifically with single moms or single parents, because they're not all moms, but moms in a lot of cases – that are homeless with one or two children, mm-hmm. and how that gets addressed. You talked a little bit about being able to provide housing for families, mm-hmm. but I'm sure it's a recurring theme. I mean, that's a vulnerable population. If you happen to have children, if you have two kids and one of them is 6 and one of them is 14, you're dealing with a drastically different age range of kids and the environment that they can't really prosper in a homeless environment. I'm not implying they do, but we'd like their life to be manageable and positive, or they become part of a recurring theme.
Right, and we do have single mothers. We do have young children. I was at the shelter last night, actually, for dinner, and there was probably about a 2.5-year-old little girl, and there was also a 14-year-old girl at the time that I was there, and they were waiting to take the van over to the overflow to spend the night. Obviously, disruptive. You know, it's not like your average child who comes home or has an after school program and then comes home and has dinner and does their homework and go to bed, or is involved in after school activities or sports. It's a very disruptive environment, and so we try to get those individuals, if they're willing. Again, it's always up to them, into case management as quickly as possible, and our case managers work to wrap some services around them. You know, one of the major issues, not only for homeless parents but parents in the community in general, is affordable childcare. You know, and yeah, there is subsidized childcare for individuals that are in the CalWORKS program, but until you get into that program, and even then, there's just not a lot of slots available that are affordable. And so and childcare is often something that's a little bit overlooked. But it's a huge need, because without childcare, how is that single mother going to even go out and look for a job? We have a lot of women that don't have anyone to care for their child, and so what do they do with that child?
I'm familiar with Echo up in Atascadero, mm-hmm. and I actually was volunteering at Echo a couple of years ago, and was talking to a parent there that their kids went to school in Paso Robles. Mm-hmm. They were not originally from Paso Robles, but they were locals. But one of the things that was important to them, they said, was they wanted their kids – and I'm not quite sure what the logistics of that are as far as open school enrollments and things like that. But they point blank said that their kids wanted to be in an environment where they didn't run into the same kids locally that knew they were homeless, and that was an ongoing issue. Mm-hmm. A similar thing happened when I helped at the Christmas dinner that the Jewish community puts on over at Dana Street every year. A kid came out of that center who was homeless and basically said, I'm not staying for dinner. And we were talking to them outside, and what the explanation was she discovered one of the kids that was helping inside was a child she knew from school. And the desire to not make that connection. By the way, that program works really hard to make sure that kind of child connection doesn't happen. But it's a small facility with a lot of people around. Do we have a way of addressing those kind of issues? Are there services for kids to help them get through that kind of thing?
Well, for us, for CAPSLO, there are some limited funds that are available to have children young and middle school age involved in after school programs, because we want children to have as much of a quote unquote normal after school experience as other kids. And so we do try to get them involved in after school activities, and we do have some funds to help pay for that. Summer camp, you know, we've had that agreement for a number of years with the city to afford to have some children go to a summer camp program. So as much as we can, we want to have our children have a life that is really kind of almost taken for granted in many other parts of our community.
The services that are available in other parts of the Central Coast in California, I mean, this is not a problem that's just ours. I guess there's programs in Santa Barbara. There's Good Samaritan in Santa Maria. Mm-hmm. I think Monterey's got a program, I think it's called Shelter Outreach Plus. Mm-hmm. Are they doing similar large center under one roof type of projects? And what can we learn from what they're doing?
Well, Casa Esperanza was actually a very good prototype for us in a number of ways. I was living down in Santa Barbara and participated in that program when it first got developed. And they had the all-under-one-roof facility. Case management was offered there. They had a state-of-the-art kitchen. They had separate family wings. They had the whole deal. They were located in a somewhat industrial area directly across the street, actually, from the rescue mission. And they're still there. But one of the things that they began to have some fairly significant issues and community pushback from was the fact that they were more of a behavior-based model. And then, like all of the emergency shelters throughout actually the country in the last few years, because of the federal policies that we're now really seeing that are reducing funding for emergency sheltering in favor of dollars going towards permanent supportive housing, funding to operate the shelters has been reduced year after year. And so those two things really mandated that the staff and the board at Casa Esperanza look at changing their programming. And so they also went to a sobriety-based program, and it has helped tremendously. So they've been a very good model to look at, really, to try and see, well, what can we do differently or what did they do? So they've been very good. I think Good Sam has an excellent model in that they don't necessarily have one large one you know stop shop, but they have a variety of options for clients, which I think is great. And because I think John said it, you don't have one prototype of a homeless person. You have homeless families, you have single parents, you have elderly, you have veterans, and their needs are all very different. I think probably, you know, people tend to see the stereotypical male having substance abuse issues stumbling down the road, and they tend to think that that's all that we serve. We do serve them, but there's a lot of other people there that we serve, the more hidden, that are living in their cars or doubling and tripling up, that are now finally getting recognized as being homeless also. And they're living on the fringe.
Yeah, I want to back up to that, because that's a topic that's come up in other discussions we've had, that we perceive a lot of people as not being homeless because they've got a friend who's got a sofa or an extra futon that they can live on for a while, and we don't see those as homeless. Mm-hmm. The reality is those are parts of the numbers that are homeless because they don't have a permanent place to live, and if they have a falling out with their friend or family member, they're on the street.
And what's really great is now the federal government is starting to see that as very true. So doubling, tripling up, this new grant that John was talking about that we're hoping to get in October recognizes veterans that are doing just that, living out of their cars, living in motels. This is unstable housing. If you can afford a motel, great, but you can't afford it all month probably, and so you're going in and out of homelessness. Yeah. It's very unstable.
I think for a lot of people, they can afford a motel because there's no down payment. But to rent a motel is, you know, Jerry was talking about housing possibilities that are between $600 and $800 a month. That translates into $25 a day. There are not $25 a day motels around, but it helps somebody for a while because they're not – dealing with the deposit, the credit check they may have to go through and things like that. So that's a way to look at that. I want to remind you folks that this is Central Coast Voices, and we are talking today about the homeless center that is planned for Prado Road. And before I forget, and I'll mention it a couple times, please let's talk about the forum tomorrow morning. Okay, 9:30 tomorrow morning at the library. Who all is going to be there? And it's being hosted by the League of Women Voters, I believe, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Well, there's I'm going to be there. John will be there. Bill Toma will be there. Laurel Weir, who is the Department of Social Services. She's the executive director for the Homeless Services and the HSOC, Homeless Services Oversight Council. And I believe I saw in the paper that Captain Giselle is going to be there as well to say a few words. I saw that.
He'll
be
available.
In the paper.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
So to talk about not just the center, but the larger issue of homelessness.
For people who may have some limited time, how long are you looking at an hour, hour and a half program, mm-hmm. or until people are done answering their questions?
I believe it's 90 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, but there'll be people around after that. So if you have some things you mm-hmm. if you want to go and you have some things you want to get answers to, but you may not want to get public answers to, there'll be folks that'll. I guess I'm putting you on the spot. You'll stick around for a while to talk
mm-hmm.
to people.
Sure, okay. And there is going to be Q&A afterwards.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is a problem. It's a problem that's not going to go away. I admire the efforts that you're making to address it. John, I want to get back to it and maybe put you on the spot a little more. How much more money is it going to take to make it move forward, and what's going to get in the way?
Raising funds is always a challenge, but fortunately, I've been in this community for 34 years, and I believe it's an incredible community with a large heart, conscience, and soul. And I think if it's clear what the goals and the programs and the future of this center is and the purposes, that the community will support it. As I mentioned earlier, we're in a quiet campaign phase, and we're already close to 40% to the amount of money necessary to build the center. Then we're going to go into a community campaign that will be more visible, asking the entire community to contribute, and that'll be done in stages. The idea of a center is part of an overall plan that has to be discussed, as Jerry's mentioning, as Grace is mentioning, and it also involves law enforcement, and everybody is finally sitting down and discussing this because it is a critical portion, a critical area of something that we as people are in a role and willing to take on because it's part of who we are. It's part of our DNA to help and be part of a community that way.
Grace, the issue of homeless people living in their cars or living in RVs, could call them recreational vehicles under mm-hmm. the circumstances, seems unusual, but yeah, that's what they are. Mm-hmm. Is the new center going to address any way of solving that particular issue?
Well, as you may know, right now at our Prado facility, we have a safe parking
It's a program. Small area, though.
It's a very small, yes, five vehicles, and we may go up two more, but yes, very small, and a lot of conditions around that. You need to be participating in case management and obviously sober and things like that. You know, interestingly enough, though, Arroyo Grande attempted to do something like this, and they had no takers. And I don't know if it was because of the location or the requirements, but it's a real issue. I don't think we'll be addressing it in our facility. We're certainly not going to have a larger place for safe parking because we're just not that type of service provider.
Well, we're down to a few more minutes left, but we've covered a lot of material here. I guess I want to get back to Jerry because I'm distressed to when we talk about the housing issue and the fact that even if we find a way to help the homeless get enough resources to get housing, it's going to not be there. Your final shot. Where can we go with housing that we're not doing already? Besides voting for Prop 41, which we'll work on for veterans, but what are we not paying attention to that we can pay attention to?
Boy, it's a complex issue. Mm-hmm. And part of it's the same thing, the same problem as the center had on Higuera. The neighbors don't want an apartment building near them. The zoning in most of our communities, there is zoning that allows for apartments, but not at a real high density. And even if it might be zoned, for example, for 40 units of apartments, the neighbors, the design requirements, the other requirements might cut that down to 20 units. And I've always argued for a truth in zoning law that says that if something's zoned for 40 units, that you should be able to build 40 units there. That's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Financing is a tremendous problem. It's very hard to get tax credits for rental projects in this area. Only two, maybe three projects get funded from Santa Barbara to Ventura County each year. It's very competitive to funding for that subsidy. Local subsidies are hard to come by. The federal programs, HOME, CDBG, they get cut back every year, 10% a year, some years more. It's very hard. Also, affordable housing developers are forced to build, I sometimes call them Taj Mahals, to get the neighbors to accept them. Yeah. So when you go down a neighborhood, there's an affordable housing project, it might be the nicest building in the area. And it has to be, because otherwise the neighbors would have stopped it.
The word "the projects" has never been a positive word in this environment. Well, that's a factor too. Mm-hmm. I thank you all, and I thank you for being with us today. We've been talking about homeless issues and the homeless center that's being planned on Prado Road, and I thank you for the discussion. I'll remind you all that there is a public forum at the county library tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. open to the public without charge, and there'll be time for a Q&A there also. This has been Central Coast Voices, and we, as you probably know, are a production of Action for Healthy Communities, which is part of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo. We're committed to projects and information gathering in a way that will help organizations like the folks we're talking with today to make this community better for all of us. And we're looking at today's choices and how they'll affect tomorrow's community. Next week, Chris Kington will be with you, and some interesting things that she's going to talk about. According to the latest action report, substance abuse is seen as a significant problem by 3/4 of the population of the Central Coast communities when talked about. She is going to talk about trends which are leading towards a major increase in the use of heroin and other opiates. And she'll be talking with members of the Drug and Alcohol Services community next week about that very serious topic. Your input about Central Coast Voices is always important to us. You can reach us by email at voices@kcbx.org. You can reach us by phone at 805-543-2323. I want to thank KCBX and the listeners of Public Radio for the support of this program and allowing it to take place. And, of course, my guests today, Grace McIntosh, John Spadafore, and Jerry Ryu. And I thank you for being with us, and I remind you that coming up next is This American Life with Ira Glass, one of my very favorite programs on KCBX. And Central Coast Voices will be back with you next week at the same time, and Chris Kington Barker will be your host.